Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's great to be back again. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese are still stranded in North Sudan, one day after a deadline for them to leave the country expired.
We know that there are about 12,000 who have been camping basically in the open air, waiting for transport. They got out of their residences to wait for the transport, which hasn't materialized.
And you can hear part five of our Learning by Ear series, The Ways of Our Fathers.
You are the military chief. We must use whatever it takes to keep power
and maintain peace.
Peace? What peace are you talking about? If we are planning on giving guns and ammunition to civilians?
All that and much more coming up in the next 25 minutes. Do stay with us.
Top story.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir accused neighbouring South Sudan on Monday of involvement in recent attacks inside his country, but insisted Khartoum remained committed to negotiations. Disputes between Sudan and South Sudan over border territory and oil revenue have come to the boil since South Sudan declared independence 9 months ago. Many South Sudanese who lived in the north have since returned home, but by no means all. 500,000 are still there, a deadline for them to leave North Sudan, handed down by Khartoum, expired on Easter Sunday. James Shimanyula reports.
Children giggled and cried at one of North Sudan camps where South Sudan citizens are preparing to return to their country following the expiry of a deadline for them and their parents to leave the north. The expiry of the deadline has put South Sudan citizens living in various parts of North Sudan in panic. 50-year-old John Jock, who has lived in the north for 4 decades, wants the authorities in Khartoum to extend the deadline. I have lived in the north for 40 years. Let them give me more time to prepare properly to return home. As Jock remains confused over whether or not he'll be allowed to remain and work in North Sudan, others want South Sudan government to help them to get home. A 32-year-old pregnant woman blames the government for failing to transport them to the south. I was on my way to the southern Sudan town of Wau, but when I and others reached the northern town of South Kordofan, government troops escorted us back to Khartoum. It is in Khartoum where government spokesman Hassan Ali Osman confirmed that his government will not extend the deadline for southerners to return home.
No, the government of Khartoum will never extend the deadline. We agree in the last round of talks in Addis Ababa to depart all the southern people in the north of Sudan to go to their home according to the conditions of the CPA.
CPA is the Comprehensive Peace Agreement which was signed in the Kenyan capital Nairobi to end 21 years of civil war. As more than 500,000 South Sudanese struggle to reach home, the authorities in the capital Juba are pleading with Khartoum to extend the deadline, as President Salva Kiir explains.
We are still engaged with the authorities of the Republic of the Sudan to extend the deadline so that we are able to repatriate all our citizens from the Republic of Sudan, particularly those who are already gathered in the camps in Khartoum.
The refusal by North Sudan government to extend the deadline for citizens of South Sudan to return home has shocked the International Organization for Migration.
James Shimanyula. One day after the deadline passed, domestic air travel between Sudan and South Sudan came to an end. Flights between the two countries are now classified as international, with all the added complications that that entails. I've been talking to Jumbe Omaru Jumbe. He's a spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, and I asked him how many southerners wanted to return to South Sudan, by whatever means.
That is a difficult question. We know that there are about 12,000 who have been camping basically in the open air, waiting for transport when they were promised by the government of Southern Sudan early last year. They got out of their residences to wait for the transport, which hasn't materialized. Apart from those 12,000 who are still waiting for the transport, we don't know how many more wish to return to the south.
What about those who want to stay? Will they be allowed to?
That is a very good question. I have been following statements from the government of Sudan, and they now say that although the deadline has expired, they are willing to allow the southerners time to regularize their stay in the north without harassment or fear. This is actually what transpired between President Bashir and Mr. Thabo Mbeki, who is the head of the AU high-level panel. I understand also that there is a delegation from the south, which is now in Khartoum, to start the process of issuing national IDs for their nationals.
So an effort is being made to defuse this crisis. Is that correct?
That is correct, largely. But from our point, we hope that the African Union high-level panel, he will now work hard to bring these two sides together to sign an agreement which was agreed in Ethiopia last month. This agreement provided for giving what is called four freedoms: freedom of residence, freedom of movement, freedom of employment, and property owning to the citizens of these two countries now. That agreement was scheduled to be signed in Juba 2 weeks ago, but because of the military standoff existing now between these two countries, that step hasn't taken place.
The standoff, the border clashes that erupted 2 weeks ago, how are they affecting the southerners in the north?
First of all, before the standoff, there were many ways for the southerners to leave the north into the south. But now the whole area of the border is closed down because of the military standoff. So basically, no private transport can take place from the north to the south. The private means of transportation is the one which used to take more people to the south rather than the organized transportation. So you can see that with this standoff, a lot of people who wanted to move to the south cannot do that.
Jumbe Omaru Jumbe from the International Organization for Migration.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
The people of Mali are waiting anxiously to see if the military junta that seized power 2.5 weeks ago really will restore democracy after the president who was ousted, Amadou Toumani Touré, formally resigned. Under a deal, the junta is now supposed to hand power to a transitional civilian government that will organise fresh elections, if possible, within 40 days. Benjamin Suarez is an expert on Mali at the African Studies Centre in Leiden in the Netherlands. I asked him if he thought this plan to put Mali back on the road to democracy would work.
I think that things seem to be happening such that there will be this transition. The Malian president formally resigned, and the head of the National Assembly has met with the junta leaders in Kati. And this seems to be the way forward, in that the junta has agreed that this person, John Kunda Traore, will become the interim president, and he will select a prime minister to lead toward the restoration of the constitutional order.
Is John Kunda Traore the right person to navigate the country through this crisis?
According to the existing Malian constitution from 1992, this is the way in which power should be handed over in the event that the serving president can no longer serve. So he is the person who will become this interim leader. But one could say that he's a controversial figure. He was a candidate for the elections that were scheduled at the end of April. And he is probably not the choice of all Malians, but he is the person who will become this interim president.
Since the junta took power, the Tuareg rebels have declared an independent state on Mali territory. How do you expect the new transitional government in Bamako to deal with this?
This is something that we will only find out in the days to come, because most Malians were really surprised that the rebels were able to make such advances in the north. And there are a couple of different rebel groups in the north, and one of them, this MNLA, this National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad, indeed has declared independence. And this has come as quite a shock to most Malians. And so most Malians really want to retake the north, but how they will go about doing that is not quite clear. Will it be through negotiations with these rebels, or will it be through military activity? And in the last few days, we've been seeing that in Bamako, some groups have been organizing militias whose objective is to militarily retake the lost territory in the north.
Benjamin Juarez from the African Studies Center in Leiden in the Netherlands. Nigerians' confidence in their government's ability to uphold security suffered another blow on Easter Sunday when a suicide car bomb exploded close to two churches and killed 38 people. Earlier, the authorities had sought to reassure Nigerians that Easter would be peaceful. The attack is believed to be the work of the militant Islamist sect Boko Haram. From Lagos, Sam Olukoya reports.
The Easter holiday was anything but peaceful for Nigerians. Another Easter Sunday bomb blast was recorded in Jos, where one person was injured when a bomb planted on a motorcycle exploded. And on Easter Monday, suspected members of Boko Haram killed four persons, while three members of the sect were killed during violence in northeastern Nigeria. Mayowa Adebola, who has followed the spate of insecurity in the country, says it is difficult to trust the government to provide adequate security after its assurances that the Easter will be peaceful.
The Nigerian people have actually lost faith in the Nigerian security system because they were warned by the British and American government about this bomb blast, and they said nothing was going to happen. Even after them saying nothing was going to happen, no machinery was put in place to check maybe it's true or it's false, and it happened. So nobody really counts on the Nigerian government.
The government is yet to say why the Easter was such a bloody one in spite of its assurances that it will be peaceful. Several churches have been attacked in the past. Joy Agbonifo, a Christian, says in the absence of adequate security by the government, churches have to organize their own security.
Worshipping in the church now is now by the grace of God. Churches now have to hire private security officials to screen people before they go into the church. It's as bad as that.
Boko Haram has carried out a spate of bombings that has killed about 400 people since the beginning of this year. Many people have urged the government and the sect to hold peace talks, but this has not been possible due to mutual distrust between both sides.
Sam Olukoya reporting from Lagos.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome you all to Learning by Ear. This is the fifth episode of our story entitled The Ways of Our Fathers. In the last episode, the inhabitants of Kijani Valley had gathered at the river. There, fighters from Torube and Koroma, led by Masambo and Mitumba respectively, were almost going to war. But will the elder Waliani's idea of how to bring reconciliation stop the looming bloodshed? Let's find out in our episode today entitled The Cost of Winning. But first, let me take you to a closed-door meeting that was taking place hundreds of kilometers away, involving the current President Matonge and his two trusted advisors, Somba, the military general, and Kero, the intelligence chief.
President Matonge, you can only win this year's election if you do as we have advised.
The polls already show you are trailing Roslyn Tano by more than 10%.
And to imagine she's a woman, that's a huge embarrassment.
Woman aside, she comes from the Torube tribe. Those people don't know how to lead anyone except a herd of cattle.
Stop it, Somba and Kero. Torubes are also part of this country. Most of them voted for me in last year's elections. The question we should ask is, why have they chosen to abandon me?
They voted for you because you bribed each family with a cow.
This time they want Rosalind, since she's one of them. She's a Torube.
And the best advice you two could come up with is to cause a conflict between the Torube and Kimbebe rebels? These rustlers hiding in the neighboring country? Is that right?
That's right, Mr. President. Besides, these tribes always steal cows from each other. They love fighting. But now, since the Kimbebe rebels have guns, grenades, rockets, and other weapons, the Torubes can't fight them. If we arm the Torubes, there will be a fierce fight, one that will probably go on for a long time.
It will make voting in Kijani very dangerous and impossible.
Ensuring you a certain victory in this year's election for a 20th year in office.
I still don't get it, Somba and Kero. Are you telling me to unleash a bloodbath on my own countrymen?
We are telling you to do all that it takes to remain in power. You only need to give us the green light, leave everything else to us.
As we speak, there is word that Koroma people and Torube are on the brink of renewed clashes. We need to move fast and take advantage of this situation.
And you are convinced that this plan will work?
Without a shadow of doubt. In case it doesn't, there's always a plan B.
Plan B? Which is?
That's why it's called a plan B. First, let us try plan A. Do you agree, Mr. President?
I don't know. What do you think, Somba? You are the military head.
We need to act swiftly so as not to cause any suspicions. It must appear as a normal conflict between two warring nomadic tribes.
Give me 2 days to think about this.
We don't have 2 days, sir. The elections are almost here.
Okay, give me 1 day then.
But Your Excellency,
this meeting is over.
What General Somba and intelligence head Kero were proposing was disturbing, and President Matonge needed time to weigh his options. Although deep down, he knew he had none left. He had used all the tricks in the book to stay in power for 2 decades. Now it seemed he had reached the end. As the two schemers left the president's office to take the elevator, they had doubts. But first, let me take you to Kijani Valley, beside the river, where Waliani was mediating a peace and reconciliation gathering between Koromas and Torubes.
People of Kijani Valley, Masambo and Mitumba have confessed to each other, and both have admitted their mistakes. Am I right?
Yes. I shall compensate Mitumba the equivalent of the damage I caused to his crops. And I was wrong to block your cows from drinking water at this river. I will also pay for whatever damage I might have caused by my actions.
Now that you two have reconciled, it is time to make a pact in the presence of all these people and in the sight of our ancestors and God himself. That you shall not attack each other nor lead your tribes to war again. The slaughtering of this cock is a symbol of killing the hatred. And you must pour the blood in the river.
I shall hold the cock down. Masambo, you do the rest.
Okay. Please hand me a sharp knife.
As the reconciliation efforts gathered momentum, General Somba was already in the elevator when his friend Carol, the intelligence chief, came running towards him.
Hold the lift, Somba. I'm coming.
I didn't know you can still run.
I'm the spy chief. What did you expect? Press the ground floor for me, please.
What do you think? Will President Matonge accept the plan?
He has no choice. Otherwise, Rosalind will win.
What if he decides not to arm the Torubes? Are we still going to take the country by force in case he loses in the election?
Are you scared? Somba, you are the military chief. We must use whatever it takes to keep power and maintain peace.
Peace? What peace are you talking about? If we are planning on giving guns and ammunition to civilians?
Peace our way?
I'm getting out here. Let me know of anything new. Spy chief.
No problem, General.
Conflicts are not new to Africa. since pre-colonial times to the Wars of Independence. After independence came the power struggles and resource conflicts, religious divisions, ethnic clashes which sometimes spilled over to neighboring countries. Most of these conflicts came as a result of the colonial setups. The colonial powers destroyed the African way of life and shattered the beliefs and practices of reconciliation. Back to the story, though. Waliani had reached a crucial stage in reconciling the two tribes of Torube and Koroma after slaughtering the cock.
God of our forefathers, you who planted us in this valley, you who give us the rains in time so that we may eat and not die of hunger. Today, these two tribes have made a pact. They have become one big family. May they honor this pact, and may anyone who breaks it break his neck. They came for war, they live in peace. If there is anyone who has anything to say, let him say it now, or forever hold his peace. My work for today is done.
Elder Waliani, I left home with an intent to kill and maim, bearing bows and arrows. But now, despite the fact that I have lost all my crops, I feel so at peace. All the hatred is gone, so I don't need these weapons anymore. I shall throw them into the fire.
Elder Waliani, my brothers and sisters, today our forefathers are smiling down at us. I too wish to throw my weapons in the fire. I thank our women for putting sense into our brains full of porridge. I just have one request before we leave this place of reconciliation. Mitumba, on behalf of my sons, Lawi and Gulu, I formally ask for your daughter's hands in marriage.
The last request caught everyone off guard, including Mitumba. What will his response be? Now that a peace pact has been enforced, is that the end of the conflict? Will the plan being hatched to arm the Torubes and cause clashes in the valley with the Kimbebe rebels who are cattle rustlers succeed? To find out, don't miss the coming episode of this Conflict and Resolutions radio novella. If you wish to listen to the episode again or send in your comments, then log on to dw.de/lbe. Until then, take care.
And if you'd like to hear that program again, the online address is dw.de/lbe. And now a reminder of some of the stories we've been covering for you in the last 25 minutes. Confusion and uncertainty still surround the fate of 500,000 South Sudanese in North Sudan, one day after the expiry of a deadline ordering them to leave. The people of Mali are anxiously waiting to see if the military junta will keep its word and hand over power to a civilian transitional government. And more than 36 people were killed when a car bomb exploded near two churches in the northern Nigerian town of Kaduna over Easter. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Please remember, we always welcome your comments on this programme. So if there's anything you'd like to tell us, don't hesitate. Our email address, feedback.africa@dw.de. feedback.africa@dw.de. Our postal address, Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, thank you for listening and bye now.